From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, last year's heroes are kicked to the curb, parents targeted by the FBI, and what's in the budget framework? Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Wednesday of this week, Attorney General Merrick Garland testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee and was grilled about his controversial October 4th memo targeting concerned parents across America who dared to get involved in their children's education. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about the hearing he was a part of is Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas.
Senator, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony. Thank you for having me back on.
Let's start right there. What do you want to know that the DOJ is stonewalling on?
Well, Tony, this directive was an unprecedented assault on the rights of parents to go to school boards and express their opinions about their kids' education. And the Department of Justice obviously was working in concert with White House political officials and liberals at the National School Board Association to write the letter that the School Board Association sent to the administration claiming that there was domestic terrorists at these school board meetings. Because you then have the Department of Justice springing into action with just four intervening days, two of which were weekends, Tony.
Right.
Weekend days. Issuing this directive, sicking the feds on these parents. Obviously, there was action in concert before the School Board Association issued its letter between the White House and the Department of Justice to prepare for this moment. Merrick Garland continues to conceal on whose initiative that School Board Association letter was solicited and how they moved so quickly. He said today it wasn't his own, so it's time that we get to the bottom of who is working on this at the Department of Justice and at the White House. And if we don't do it while the Democrats are in charge, and mark my words, we'll do it in 15 months whenever the Republicans are in charge once again.
Now, Senator, you asked specifically about some particular individuals working at the Department of Justice, whether or not they brought this issue to him. You mentioned in the hearing that you've heard from FBI officials regarding General Garland's memo. Can you share more about what you've heard?
We have the Deputy Attorney General just days after the Attorney General's memo was issued. I asked her at the time, because we had already heard from sources in the FBI that the FBI had seen this letter on September 29th and kind of laughed it off as comical, that of course the FBI shouldn't be involved in school board meetings that might grow somewhat contentious or heated. Yet they were overridden. I wanted the Deputy Attorney General to address that. She implied that there was no opposition. And then, Tony, we were deluged with calls from FBI officials who said that is not the case. So another thing we need to get to the bottom of is who in the FBI was consulted by the Attorney General or those responsible for this directive, and what did the FBI say? At a time when the FBI should be focused on figuring out who's funding these caravans coming to our southern border or cracking down on Chinese espionage, why did Merrick Garland disregard their advice and tell them to go investigate parents who don't like their kids being taught to hate America?
Now, Senator Cotton, you also brought up another, I think it was a three-page memo, that outlined federal crimes that the parents could be charged with. Now, when you asked the Attorney General about this, he said he had not seen it, didn't know anything about it. Tell our listeners more about that memo.
Yeah, so we received from sources, Tony, a memorandum with a spreadsheet full of federal crimes that parents might commit at school board meetings, not state crimes, not disorderly conduct, not criminal threats, but federal crimes, Tony.
And this was specifically focused on this issue of what's happening at school boards.
It was a letter from the U.S. Attorney in Montana to the Montana Attorney General, to all Montana sheriffs, to all Montana DAs, to the Montana School Board Association, in response to, directly as a result of, Merrick Garland's directive. And it specifically references not meetings, not consultations, not coordination, Tony, but federal investigation and prosecution, and it attached to it a spreadsheet listing in detail 13 federal criminal statutes that might be used to target these parents. One of those statutes that Merrick Garland mentioned himself, and I cited, Tony, says the use of telecommunications devices to annoy the recipient. So think about that, Tony. If a parent or a parental group post on Facebook or other social media that they are dissatisfied with school board members, and the school board members find that annoying, Merrick Garland might sic the U.S. attorney on them. And I can just tell you, Tony, I don't think that the Montana U.S. Attorney's Office came up with that list on its own. I think that came from the Department of Justice. I mean, in fact, the format of that list, Tony, looked exactly like what we get in the Senate when we ask the Department of Justice for technical legal advice on statutes we're drafting. So we're going to get to the bottom of that as well. How is it that the U.S. Attorney's Office in Montana used the exact same format in great detail to send out to so many people in Montana federal crimes that you could charge parents with?
Now, there was a distinction, a difference between the memorandum dated October the 4th, which the Attorney General put out, and the press release announcing that memorandum. The announcement of the memorandum went further in detailing what the memorandum was going to accomplish.
Yeah, and Tony, it said it was creating a task force of the U.S. Attorney's offices, and the Civil Rights Division, and the Criminal Division, and this was what's in that press release. It was not in the memo, but in the press release, including the National Security Division. Tony, the National Security Division consists of the lawyers at the Department of Justice who are engaged in counterintelligence and counterterrorism matters. Why in the world would lawyers who spend their time trying to stop jihadists from attacking America or trying to track down Chinese spies be pursuing parents at school boards?
You asked the Attorney General about that. What was his response?
He has no good response, Tony. He hemmed and hawed and beat around the bush because there is zero reason. Even if you think it is an appropriate federal role to be essentially spying on parents who are expressing their opinions at school boards and perhaps pursuing them with federal crimes, why would it be the National Security Division? It's preposterous. It's only designed to do exactly what one of your opening clips said, which is to intimidate parents and to chill their speech.
There's no other explanation. There is absolutely no other explanation for this. When you talk about, and I just want to underscore what you said at the very beginning about the time frame. I've raised that before. Nothing moves that fast in Washington, D.C., where literally in two working days, this has cleared the entire Department of Justice, and you have a memo coming out based upon this letter to the President of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this was done as a political effort to respond to what they viewed as parents going over the line and, horror of horrors, expressing their opinion about what their kids learn at school, about whether their kids have to wear masks at school, about whether you should allow boys dressed as girls into the girls' bathroom. Because remember, Tony, the national poster child for these supposed domestic terrorists that have gone to school board meetings and threatened violence was Scott Smith in Loudoun County, who went to the Loudoun County School Board because his daughter had been raped, Tony,
right,
by a boy dressed as a girl in the school bathroom. And the Loudoun County School Board and their woke superintendent covered it up because it would have interfered with their efforts to pass a transgendered policy during Pride Month.
Yeah. You brought that up in today's hearing. And by the way, we've only got about a minute and a half left. Last week, speaking of this, you introduced a bill to prevent K through 12 schools from facilitating or pressuring a child's gender transition. It's actually a bill that protects parental rights. Quickly tell our viewers about that.
Yeah, Tony, there is a disturbing and growing pattern across America's schools of woke teachers and administrators encouraging children to so-called transition and honoring that at school, calling them by their preferred name, their preferred pronouns, encouraging them to use different bathrooms and dress in different ways than when they come to school. And then, Tony, to conceal it at home. They don't put these files in the central files of the school, so they don't say it's covered under Family and Educational Rights Act, and they intentionally obscure to those parents what they're doing at the school. Parents should always know what's happening at their kid's school.
It's amazing what is happening in our schools. It's the Empower Parents to Protect Their Kids Act. I assume you have some things on your website about that. We'll put that up on our website so people can see more about it.
Thank you,
Senator.
Tommy,
always great to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Great to be on with you.
You can find out more about Senator Cotton, as well as links for our resources to help you engage your local officials, when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Have you ever tried to read the Bible daily, but struggled to get in a groove? It can be hard, especially if you don't know where to start, or how to understand and apply what you've read. Or maybe it's just that doing it alone has made it too easy to give up. Well, let me encourage you. You don't have to do this daily discipline alone. You can join Family Research Council's Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan. Let's stay grounded in God's truth and grow closer to God together. Sign up today by visiting frc.org/Bible.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Earlier this week, Senator Marsha Blackburn introduced the Keeping Our COVID-19 Heroes Employed Act to save essential workers from being fired due to President Biden's sweeping vaccine mandates. She joined Tony Perkins on Wednesday to talk about it.
A year ago, these frontline workers were heroes. We were celebrating them. My daughter's an ER nurse, worked with COVID patients, law enforcement showing up doing their jobs at great risk, especially when we didn't know the extent of this virus. And now we're talking about firing them if they don't submit to a mandate for a shot.
Yes. Tony, it is absolutely ridiculous. We need to realize COVID is going to be with us. We have seasonal flu, we have the common cold, we have other maladies that affect us. So this is going to be with us. Now, the federal government has no reason to mandate that everyone get this shot. And it is an overreach. It is another step that they're trying to take to have the federal government take control of your health care. And after meeting with some workers in Tennessee that would be adversely impacted by this, I said, we need to do legislation that would exempt these essential workers from having to get the shot, because these are people that showed up for work every day during COVID. They figured out how to keep themselves safe, how to keep their families safe. They did their job. And now they're being faced with this mandate,
right?
Whether they're a first responder, law enforcement, healthcare, airline, truck drivers, grocery store employees. And so many of them are saying, I don't want to take this.
Right.
I have concern. My family has a history of heart disease, or maybe it's a respiratory issue, or a family member got the vaccine and had an adverse reaction, and they're suffering from long COVID. These are things that should provide them an exemption. So on their behalf, and in order to help them, I wrote this legislation that would simply say, if you are an essential worker deemed so during the COVID-19 pandemic, and you reported for work during the pandemic, that you would be exempt from this vaccine mandate.
I think it's an excellent bill. And by the way, I might add to this that many of these frontline workers, these essential workers, especially the healthcare workers, being exposed to COVID, got COVID, now have natural immunity, and that's not even being factored in. Now, this bill already has been endorsed by numerous groups, including the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, National Border Patrol Council, Chicago Fraternal Order of Police, a National Sheriff's Association, a National Association of Small Trucking Companies. What message should that send to the Biden administration?
With all of these unions supporting my legislation, it should tell them that this is very unpopular with Democrats, Republicans, Independents, everyone, because there are so many people that do not want to be forced to get this vaccination. And we don't have these vaccination mandates. There is always the exemption from a medical concern or a religious objection. And that is the way this should be approached.
So, Senator, has the bill been assigned a number yet?
It has not been assigned a number, and we're waiting to see where they're going to direct it.
All right. Any Democratic support for this yet?
Not yet.
All right. What do our listeners and viewers need to be doing to help you on this? Because I think this is an important piece of legislation.
It is an important piece of legislation. I will tell you that Congressman Tim Burchett and Congresswoman Kat Kamak are going to carry this over in the House. And they need to let them know that they're supporting. They need to call their federal representatives and say, keep our essential workers working, support this legislation, and make certain that they are given this federal exemption.
All right. That's the Keeping Our COVID-19 Heroes Employed Act. And Senator, as soon as we get, as soon as you get a number and we get a direction on what committee it's going to for the Committee of Jurisdiction, we'll make sure that our viewers and listeners know that so that they can weigh in with their two senators as well as their member of Congress.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
You can find out more about Senator Blackburn as well as her bill to protect our vital essential workers when you head over to TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, a look at the president's budget framework.
More than ever before, Christians need to be grounded in the truth of God's Word and be prepared to articulate them in a winsome manner. That is why Family Research Council has launched the Center for Biblical Worldview. By applying the Bible and the historical teachings of the Church to a wide range of relevant issues, including voting, religious liberty, abortion, marriage, and sexuality, the experts at the Center have provided resources to help Christians live by a biblical worldview. To understand why Scripture must be authoritative and to equip believers to advance and defend the faith in the workplace, in schools, in their communities, and in the public square. Access free resources like the Biblical Worldview series at frc.org/worldview. To get highlights of the latest work of the Worldview Fellows, including their latest blogs, op-eds, interviews, and publications, sign up at frc.org/subscriptions.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Thursday, in an effort to get some movement on his budget, President Biden talked about his revised budget framework, which still hasn't been fully fleshed out. Representative Byron Donalds of Florida, who is a member of the House Budget Committee, joined Tony Perkins on Thursday to talk about the president's plan.
Congressman Donalds, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's good to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
So first of all, what do you make of the president's framework? What is going to be in that framework?
Listen, honestly, Tony, that's a question we're all asking. They literally just started releasing text maybe 20 minutes ago. Nobody really knows what's actually in this bill. The last thing that we've heard that is actually going to somewhat make the cut is going to be free child care, a one-year continuation of the child tax credit. But all of the quote-unquote pay-fors, which is basically just tax increases, that's what they call, you know, pay-fors here in D.C., it remains to be seen what's going to make the final cut. The problem the Democrats have is that their massive spending is unpopular. Nobody wants to see tax increases in a time where inflation is run rampant. We're not creating nearly the amount of jobs that we should be. We're not growing nearly as fast as we should be. And so nobody wants to sign on for tax increases. Nobody wants to sign on for massive spending, except for the radical progressives that exist in the Democrat Party. And they're trying to push all this through while at the same time, GDP numbers are coming out and they're looking terribly bad. And the president's trying to have a political win before he goes meets with other leaders in Scotland. When the reality is, the Chinese and the Russians don't care about what's happening in Scotland.
What's the time frame? I mean, you said that 20 minutes ago you got the text of the bill. How rapidly is Nancy Pelosi going to try to push this through?
it's still not clear. It's not even clear if they have the votes for this. And that's the problem we have. Also in the background, you have the gubernatorial election in Virginia, where Democrats are running scared as we speak that Glenn Youngkin is going to become the next governor of Virginia. And so they're all looking at the political landscape as well as trying to pass through some of the agenda items they've always wanted. So the timetable right now is unknown in Washington, D.C. The only one that really knows that is Nancy Pelosi.
Congressman Donalds, let me ask you this question. The president claiming today that this wasn't going to add a single penny to the deficit. In fact, it would reduce the deficit. Can you tell me how?
Oh, no, he's lying. There's no possible way this doesn't add to the deficit. Look, even the original proposal, what they were doing was they would start a program for 2 years and then end it. Child tax credit in the new proposal is for a 1 year extension and then they end it. What the Democrats are trying to set up are annual votes on child tax credit. They're trying to set up new votes on paid family medical leave because they don't believe that Republicans will do the right thing and get rid of those programs once and for all. If you looked at the 10-year run of what those programs would do, it would add $13 trillion to the debt. And the fact that the Democrats' only plan is to raise taxes, what we know what happens historically, when you raise taxes, the government gets less money than they think they were going to get originally. And then when you take something like the Trump tax cuts, where Democrats will tell you time and time again, it added $2 trillion to the deficit. That is actually a lie. The Trump tax cuts have raised more money than Washington has ever raised in tax revenue than at any other point in American history. If you were going to tell Americans that Trump's tax policy raised more money than at any other point in American history, how does that actually add to our deficit? So when Joe Biden runs out there and says that these programs will actually decrease our deficit and our debts, he is lying to you. But let's just be perfectly honest. The president's never had a job. He's never had to balance a company's balance sheet. He's probably never had to balance his own checkbook. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
What are you hearing among the Democratic members? I mean, you've got the progressive wing that wants more socialist goodies in this. And now we're talking about a package that's been trimmed back from $3.5 trillion to $1.75 to $2 trillion. We're not certain exactly what the number is. Is there a lot of inter-party fighting among Democrats?
Oh, big time. There's big time fighting up here on Capitol Hill amongst Democrats. The moderate members, frankly, don't want to take this vote. I know they're trying to be, you know, team players or whatever that means. But the reality is they don't want to take this vote. The progressive members still want to go back to $3.5 trillion. What I'm hearing is that they might settle for these programs to run for a shorter amount of time. And I stress this, shrinking the dollar amount of this package is not them getting rid of programs. I think the only thing that's really come out of it is community college funding, and maybe one of the Medicare proposals. That's it. Everything else is just shrinking the time that these programs are going to be authorized to be spending money. But what that really means is that in future years in Congress, the Democrats will push votes in order to reauthorize the spending. And that's how this thing gets ballooned out of control. So whether it's $1.75 trillion or $3.5 trillion, if you run these programs over 10 years, which is how Washington always budgets its money, then you're talking about $5.5 trillion every decade. It will add $13 trillion to our debt over time. That's the real math. Those are the facts.
That's an extremely important point to make, is that, and I'm looking at some of, again, this is speculation because I haven't seen the text of the bill. I'm going off of what the president said earlier. But you're right. It's just setting expiration dates, which we know, as you mentioned earlier, a program never goes away. And the Democrats know that. All they need to do is get this into the bill, get it established. It has a constituency, and rarely does a program ever go away. So you're absolutely right. The size of this in terms of dollar amount doesn't really matter. That's not where our eyes should be. Our eyes should be on what's actually in the bill, the programs that it creates and expands.
You got it exactly right. Couldn't have said any better myself.
Let me ask you, as the president, I had to chuckle when he said this. I say chuckle. I should probably cry. But he said this today. He said, quote, "We are at an inflection point. The rest of the world wonders whether we can function." So does spending money and growing government bigger, is that the evidence of the ability of government to function?
That's only in the mind of Joe Biden and progressive Democrats. Look, what the rest of the world is looking at when it comes to the United States is, number one, are we actually going to get our fiscal house in order, or are we going to continue down this sophomoric line of just promising everything to everybody and spending money we don't have? The countries that love for us to do stuff like this are the Chinese, the Russians, the Iranians, and the North Koreans. They love this. This is great. Because what America is doing is diminishing ourselves internally, which means we're taking our eye off the ball from a geopolitical standpoint. So they love this. To our allies in Europe, what they're wondering is are we going to get serious about the world stage and be able to continue to support their military needs in decades to come? And they have serious questions as well. Joe Biden is an old school politician who's trying to create a legacy. The radical Democrats have been waiting for an opportunity to have their chance at the levers of power in Washington, D.C. for, frankly, 100 years. And now they have an opportunity to push their agenda. But that's not what most Americans want. Frankly, unless you're an adversary of ours, that's not what most of the world wants. And so we have some serious thinking to do, not just in Washington, D.C., but regular Americans everywhere. What is the trajectory of our country? Do we want to have a strong economic engine? Do we still want to have a strong military? Do we want to be the singular economic and military power in the world? Or do we want to be a subservient nation to the Chinese industrial complex and the Chinese military complex? Do we want to be another socialized Western European democracy that basically can't get out of its own way, is mired in bureaucracy, is mired in debt, where we continue to fall behind year after year after year? That is the question in front of every American. So with respect to what Joe Biden said earlier today, I'll agree in one respect. This is a tipping point, and we need to make sure we don't tip over the edge, because we have a country to save.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.